All right, so let's get started. we did the Mishnah, at least the first half of the Mishnah yesterday. But today we're going to take up the question of the question in general of the nature of these Isurim, right? The nature of the Isur of the Inuyim, okay? All right, so what do we know, first of all, about the difference between the Isser Achila and Shasiya versus the Isser of the other four Inuim? Right, so first of all, that's what the Gemara mentions, that that Achila and Shasiya, I mean, it's open in the Pasuk, is V'nichrsa, is Kares. And the other Inuyim is no Isser Kares. Right? Okay.
And isn't that pasuk that says Shabbaton and that we're like tying in?
Okay, so that's the second question. The question is where do they come from at all?
Okay.
Right? Okay, well, where does Achila and Shasiya come from? Alright, so let's take a quick overview of the Pesukim. Okay, because you gotta get a little bit of a grasp on the parashios. So where is the mitzvah of Yom Kippur mentioned? So it's mentioned in three places, right? It's mentioned in Achrimos, right? What does it say in Achrimos? It says, "B'chorish Hashvi, b'esol l'chorish, te'anu es nafsho seichem." Right? That's the first one. Te'anu es nafsho seichem. V'chol malocha lo sasu, ho'ezrach v'ager gor b'sochem. So that pasuk has what? It has something that's called inuy of the nefesh. Right? Te'anu es nafsho seichem. So that we learn, that the Gemara darshins to mean eating and drinking. Right? Yeah, and then it says, "Ki b'yom zeh yichaper aleichem tarascha mikol chatoseichem v'nei Hashem titaru," and Shabbason hilachem v'inisem es nafshoseichem chukas olam. Okay, that's what you have over there in Achrimos. Okay, and then you have it again where, in Emor, right? In Emor is part of the. I mean, Achrimos is the parsha of the Avodah. Of Yom Kippurim. That's the Seder of the Avodah Yom Kippurim. Emor is just generally the Yom Tovim. Right? And again, it says they're very similar. Ach besol chodesh hashvi as a yom kippurim hu mikra kosh yilachem v'inisem es nafsho seichem. Again, v'inisem es nafsho seichem. V'krav tamisha l'Hashem. You have to bring a korban. V'chol malocha lo sasu. Again, isser malocha. Betzal miyom hazeh ki yom kippurim hu l'chaper aleichem v'nei Hashem l'kechem. Okay. Ki kol nefesh lo se'une betzal miyom hazeh v'nichrus l'meyameh. So here you have kares, right? You didn't have kares in Achrimos, did you? And that's saying Kares is kol hanefesh asher lo seuna. So again, that's what the Gemara darshins is. That's dafka achila and shasiya. The kol nefesh asher sasa kol malacha. Okay, again, so malacha also is Kares. Vati es nefesh imikarav amo. Kol malocha lo sasu, chukas olam lo sechem, chomo sho sechem, shabbos shabboson hu lochem, v'inisem es nafsho sechem. So how do you know if you're talking about Achrimos or Emor? Because Achrimos is what? Shabbos shabboson hi lochem, v'inisem es nafsho sechem. And Emor is shabbos shabboson hu lochem, v'inisem es nafsho sechem. What do you say, Gil? Okay, but Tisha L'chosh B'Av Me'er V'Av Erev Tish B'Shabbat Chem. Okay, fine. And then you have it one more time in the Karbanos. by Pinchas. Right? And there's not that much. Ubesser lachosh ashvi ezemikoshi lachem, vi nisem es nafshasechem, komolachu lo sasu. Okay. Doesn't have Shabbos on that one. Correct? Okay. Or Kares. All right, you just got to be familiar because the Gemara is going to be throwing around these psukim. The Rambam's throwing around these psukim. You got to know where they're coming from and what the basic what the basic differences are. Okay, fine. So anyway, so that's the Gemara. So the Gemara says that's what the Gemara takes up. The Gemara says, where do you get the extra inuim from? So the Gemara strangely has two sources, right? The first one it says on Ayin Dalad. Detanu Rabbah Rav Yosef Bishar Sifri Debei Rav Minayin Liyom Kippurim She'osar Berachitza Besicha U'Beni'ilas HaSandal U'Betashra Shamita. Where do you get the other four Inuyim? Talmud Lomar Shabbas Shabbason. So what does that mean? Shabbas Shabbason. So Rashi explains that's the Shabbas Shabbason V'inisim. That's the Shabbas Shabbason. That's in the pasuk of Inui. Shabbos Shabboson hulachem or hilachem v'nisem es nafshosechem. So what does that mean? It means not only is there a regular, so the darsh, the Rashi says, it comes to darshan more Inuyim. How? That's like what we say by Shabbos. Shabbos also says that the chachamim say that we say there's more than just malacha. There's more than just shvisa for malacha. There's also a separate mitzvah of tishbos. And we call it a shvus. The Rabbanan added more isurim to accentuate or to assist in the deraisa of shvisa. I mean, you saw the Rashi over here. I mean, Rashi equates it exactly to what the Rabbanan do by Shabbos.
He quotes the other Shabbos Shabboson than the Gemara is quoting. It's or maybe it's just a mistake.
No, which one?
Because the Gemara says
those types of things are not. But Rashi says it's the Shabbos Shabboson v'gavoy inoiksiv, right? So it says Shabbos Shabboson by inoi, and just like it says. By Shabbos, just like when it says Shabboson by Shabbos, the Rabbanon added things that are not malacha or not in the Mishkan. So too here he says Shabboson. Digabi inay dechsev Shabboson. Oh, you mean, well, you don't know if it's who or he? I think they both spell the same way though. Can't tell sometimes.
I think the next.
Yeah, anyway. Lahosif al inoy achilu shasiya kasi. So it comes to add to the inoy of achilu and shasiya. But it's mashma from Rashi. Rashi is purely an asmachta. No, purely drabanim.
Yeah, that's what.
What's the idea of adding to inoy? I mean, adding to inoy. I understand by Shabbos. So you say Shabbos is a day where it should accomplish a certain. There's a certain idea of resting, certain idea of pulling yourself away from your mundane activities. So there's a kiyam midaraisa you'd violate shvisa if you engage in certain productive activities. But midrabanan they say to make sure that you can still be very busy even keeping away from malacha. So it's sort of helping to accomplish the goal of Shvisa. That I understand. I mean, like the Rambam says, why did the Rabbanan institute Muksa? So he says that's one of the reasons, because otherwise a person could keep Shabbos, but be busy moving his kalim around all day long, moving rocks from here to there. You know, it could be, you can be involved in a lot of things and not be resting. You can be involved in a lot of things that are not malacha and still not a. It sort of like undermine the goal of Shabbos of a certain shvisa. But what's harder to understand is that I understand Shabbos. What's the what? How do you apply that logic to inoy? mean? Torah says what? V'nisim es nafsho sechem. So you have to remove, you have to have a certain suffering of achila and shasiya. And what? Want to tack on more suffering? For what? I mean, for what? It's like a kiyam and being in pain. I mean, it sounds like from Rashi that there's like a kiyam and being in discomfort. Torah only demanded a certain level of discomfort. But you could sort of what? How would we work it, like in an analogous way, from Shabbos to Yom Kippur? I understand by Shabbos, you say, look, Shabbos, Torah says Shabbos is Shabboson, meaning it should be, there's an idea of Isser Malacha, but there's a positive idea of rest, of not being busy, right? Of course, why do we want to rest on Shabbos? Why do we want to rest on Shabbos? I mean, there has to be a reason. There has to be a goal. I'm not saying philosophically even, just halachically. Just to be, just have a lazy day.
No,
of course not.
It's
to be free, to be involved, to have the opportunity to be involved in Talmud Torah, involved in ideas, involved in learning, right? It's not just, there's no day off. It's a day off from work, but it's to give you the opportunity to, it creates a certain context, a certain background, a certain backdrop, a certain type of day that you have the ability to engage in Torah. People work all week and they don't have the opportunity to engage in learning constantly. So it's obviously Shvisa from Malacha, in order to have a certain day of Kedusha Shabbos, Tainug, Oneg Shabbos, certain, right? So therefore you understand, it makes sense that the Rabbanim can come in and say, look, it's possible, the Torah gives you Isser Malacha to help create a certain idea of Shvisa, but it's still possible for a person to do things that have nothing to do with Malacha and, you know, destroy the Shvisa. Like the Ram mentions, you can be busy all day moving things around. So the Rabbanan come in and say, look, we want to assume Mishmeres L'Mishmarti. So the Torah says there's a certain kiyam of Shvisa. Malacha is Midaraisa that would violate Shvisa. But we want to accentuate, we want to assist in making sure, practically speaking, everybody is not engaged in nonsense all day. So Shvisa, you have a Shvus, right? But it's coming to help with the Shvisa, right? In order that you actually have a day that's Roy for Kedusha Shabbos. But what do you say, what are you going to say by Yom Kippur? What are you going to say by Yom Kippur? How would you say that? Like, what's the point?
Yeah.
Now, this raises the question that we started discussing yesterday. The question is there a real idea of Inoy? Is there a positive sense of Inoy? Or is it really just, or is the idea of, like you were saying, refraining from certain things? When you stop eating, you're doing two things. You're refraining from the eating, right? Like a malacha, like not doing a certain action. But you're also engendering a certain discomfort. Right, I'm saying from a plain reading of Rashi, it just seems like he's saying we're adding on to the Inoys. We're adding on to Inoy. And not only that, I mean, the Gemara in Ayin Vav says, how do you know these five Inuyim? Because if you were keeping track in the Psukim as we were going through, it says the word Inoy five times. Okay, it says it six times, Tosis mentions, but five times that we're going to count. So it means to say that there's Inoy, not only is there the Inoy of Achila and Shasiya, but we're adding on more Inoyim. Yeah. So you could say one of two things. You could say that it's to give a further Inoy, and what does the Torah really say? What's the Pasuk really? V'inisem es nafsho seichem. And then what does it say? Torah also explains what's the purpose of Inui, right? Just like we said by Shabbos, there's an objective of the Shvisa. Is there an objective of the Inui? Yeah, 1 second. Ki bayom hazeh yechaper aleichem l'tareschem. Right? There's a certain idea, it would seem, of kapara and of inoy and kapara. Right? Which is not a big stretch, right? Is a certain idea of what's the source of chait, basically, is pleasures of the body, is a basic source of the motivation of sin, the guf. So there's a certain idea that we negate the body. We even afflict the body. Okay, so you could say that they're adding on, they're augmenting, they're bringing it out on different levels. Okay, so that's possible to say that's the way Rashi's learning. Okay, but basically what are we here for, more or less, is just to show you that there are the two drushas. You have the one drusha of Shabbos Shabbason. Right, and Rashi notes that that's similar to a regular case of Shavuos, and then the Gemara later in Ayin Vav says, really, Hani Chamisha Inuim Keneged Mi? What are they against? Keneged Hey Amar Rav Chista Keneged Hey Inuim Shebetorah. Right, Ube Esor Ube Avach Beesor Shabbos Shabboson Shabbos Shabboson Vayesol Lachem. Okay. Yeah. I mean, the connection between Inui and Kapara is really expressed in Achrimos. V'yosol lechem l'chukas olam, b'chodesh ha'shvi, b'esher l'chodesh, te'anu es nafsho seichem, v'chol molocha lo sase ha'ezrach v'ager ha'gar b'sochem, ki b'yom hazeh yichaper aleichem, l'tar eschem, mikol chato seichem, v'nei Hashem titaru. Right? Shabbos shabboson hi lechem, v'nisim es nafsho seichem, chukas olam. So the Inui and the Shvisa from Molocha are essential for the for kapara. The other possibility, by the way, is to say that it's just to prevent the person from engaging in other tanugim to negate the inoy of achilah and shtiyah. In other words, the rabbanon could come in two ways. it could be added to accentuate, you know, to tack on more inoy. Or it could be more like we were saying by Shabbos, that it's true a person could be fasting and have a certain inoy from the fasting, but he can do other pleasurable things to take his mind off of it. You know what I mean? So the other things are added to just like we said by Shabbos, a person can refrain from engaging in malacha deraisa and still undermine shvisa by doing other things. So it's possible for a person to fast, but you know, take a nice bath, take a nice moisturizing treatment session, yeah, and put on those nice leather shoes, you know, and protect himself from. I mean, that's like a question on regular tinnitus. Like you, on regular tinnitus, you fast, but are you allowed to smoke? Are you allowed to do other things? Okay. Anyway, yeah. There's a certain idea that Rama mentions in Hilchos Tshuva. I mean, right, that Yom Kippur, the day of Yom Kippur is a kapara, right? You ever see that? So he says, Af bisha hatshuva mechaperas ala kol, it's in Perek Aleph. Ve'atzmo shel Yom HaKippur mechaper. And the day of Yom Kippur is a mechaper. Yesh averos shemiskaprim b'shaitan. There are some averos that the kapara comes immediately with the tshuva. V'yesh averos shemiskaprim elalachazman. Sometimes the kapara comes later. Ketzad. Ovar adam al mitzvahs aseh shein ba'kari svasa tshuva. If you're over an aseh, you wear a four-cornered garment without the tzitzis. Eino zoz, but then you did tshuva. Eino zoz misham ad shemochul lo miyad. So immediately as kapara. Overall mitzvahs lo sase she'ein v'kareis v'lo misas beistin v'asa tshuva. Over a lav that has no misas beistin, you ate the treif. So, and you did tshuva. Tshuva tola v'yom ha-kippur mechaper. U'be'elu nemar ki b'yom hazeh yechaper alecha. So just the experience of Yom HaKippurim with tshuva beforehand is a kapara. And there's no doubt that Inoy is part of that formulation. Because then he says further, there's some mitzvahs that even Yom, that tshuva and Yom Kippur are tolin, and it takes yisurin, it takes a certain amount of pain or difficulty for the tshuva to be complete. So there is an idea like that. There is an idea like that. What's the idea like? What is the idea that yisurin, that you need, a person needs yisurin for kapara? What's the idea a person should need yisurin to have kapara? So we once discussed it. I'll give you a possibility. It's not really the topic of the shiur, but I'll give you a possibility. What does it mean kapara? Kapara means those you have a slicha and you have kapara. Right, slicha means like a temporary, like the Rav says, slicha is a stay, a temporary stay of the order. You get time. You get the punishment is in abeyance. You get a stay of the execution. Yeah. Right, like Moshe, after the eagle, he had slicha, but he didn't have kapara yet, because he had to go back and be mispalo for kapara. But slicha was we had immediately, meaning to say, Hashem was going to destroy Klal Yisrael at that moment, and slicha prevented the destruction. But kapara means to be reinstated, like it didn't to go back, and the removal of the effect of the midst of the avera itself. Sometimes a person can do an avera, and you chayav an onesh. So it's possible for slicha to say, hold off on the onish, but it doesn't mean you've really really undid all of the effects of the chait in yourself, and you really returned completely to a state of that you weren't before. You can't always undo things as easily as you do things, right? You can reach a level where you're not chayv in the onesh, but that doesn't mean that the effects of the chait were removed. So sometimes a person has to actually suffer something to really be able to be reinstated. Now, is that just an idea? Why should that be? Why should that be? I mean, is that just like why should you have to suffer? You did tshuva. You did tshuva. You recognize what you did is wrong. Why should you have to have the suffering? So I'll just tell you a possibility. I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of possibilities. But one possibility that we once discussed is, the person operates really on two planes. Person really, as we know, a person has two ways of viewing things. You have a rational side, and then there's an emotional side. And we don't really, we can't really free ourselves from the emotional outlook. You always have to be on guard for that's what we call the Yetzer. The Gemara says the Yetzer and the Satan are the same thing. So there is a certain idea, let's say a person sins, and he does tshuva. So rationally he knows he made a mistake, and he corrects himself. But on the emotional level, there still is a certain feeling of gain. Like there used to be, there's an expression sometimes people say, it's easier to ask for forgiveness than to ask for permission. Meaning to say, you do the wrong thing, and then you'll do the right, and then you'll ask for forgiveness, and look at the result. The basic result is I got what I wanted, and I'm back in good graces, right? So even though a person does tshuva and rationally really corrects himself, there's a certain inner emotional feeling of I gained. The chait was still good.
I didn't learn a lesson.
I still feel an attachment, my emotional attachment. There still is an emotional attachment to the thing. Like on a certain level, you feel like you got away with it. So that's a remnant of the chait. Kapara is not complete until you really can get all the remnants of the chait out. When a person suffers something and he thinks, the Gemara says, well, if you suffer, you're supposed to be mefashresh b'mayasav, you're supposed to think back. What's this related to? Then there's a certain amount of, even on the emotional level, evening out the score. So maybe that's part of the idea, that you have to really recognize not only rationally, but even somewhat, the chait also was an experience. You have to have a corresponding experience to on a very basic level to sort of even things out. So maybe that's part of the inui, and that's more valuable than let's face it, there's plenty of time where you're still comfortable on Yom Kippur. Right? Generally, when Yom Kippur starts, you're uncomfortable because you're just so full, you can't. And at the end of the day, you're tired. But there's a good couple of hours there where you have this concept. You're aware of the mitzvah of the day. You're aware of the idea of inui, and you're not distracted, and you're not satisfying your goof, and you're really focused. Okay. Anyway, but let's go back to the question that we were discussing of the Rabbanan versus the Raisa. Okay, so let's take the Ran. So I want to read the Ran. Okay, good. That's a little bit complicated. So now he says, now the Gemara explains, the Gemara explains that the Gemara is bothered. Why does it say Yom HaKippurim is Osir Ba'achilu B'Shasiyo R'chitza V'Sicho V'Nil Sandal U'B'Tashur Shamita? What does it mean, Osir? What's the implication of Osir? Is an implication of Osir. Osir, yes, but no Kares. Right? You should say chayavin, right? So chayav is lashon of kares. Aser just means you're not allowed to do it. Doesn't mean there's no kares. So the Gemara is bothered. Why does it say aser by all of these things? Which is mashma that even achila and shasiyah is only iser. Iser ika, but kares leka. So the Gemara explains a strange thing, but we'll try to take up the topic. That when it says achila and shasiya are aser and no kares, it's referring to a chatzi shir of achila and shasiya. Okay, go ahead. All right, so no, if you eat and drink kashir, eat or drink kashir, you'll be chayav kares. Go ahead. Okay, good. So the Gemara answers up that achil and shasiya really are chayev kares. It only says iser to include chatzishir. But by the rest, but by the other inuyim, there is only iser and no kares. Good. Right. So aside from the fact that it's only that there's no kares and iser, there's iser but no kares by the dalet inuyim. Some go further and say that they're only aser midrabbanan. They're not even aser midraisa. Based on what? Go ahead.
But also how did the Gemara cry?
Yeah, I mean the Gemara has a psukim. Dalet Inui five times, and each one of the Inuyim has a pasuk. That's okay. It's not a pasuk from Torah, but has a pasuk from Nach that shows it's an Inui.
So yeah.
Asmachta ba'alman inu. Yep. Asmachta ba'alman. What does asmachta ba'alman mean? What does asmachta mean? If it's drabbanan, why do they quote psukim? Why do they? This seems a little bit. Passing your work off for someone else. So why do they do it? Why do they do it? So some say it's just like, oh, it's just like the way that they, the Torah Shebichsav is very, was on their fingertips. And Torah Shebal Peh, they don't want to write down. So they use things in Torah Shebichsav to help remind them of, of the Torah Shebal Peh too. Right, like they're coding it in. But it's just a mnemonic. Okay? It doesn't mean it's deraisa. They quote the psukim just to help them remember things. I mean, some want to say that it means there's like some deeper kiyum deraisa, but anyway, go ahead. But bottom line is, halachically speaking, it's derabanan. When it's an asmachta, it's derabanan. But still, why should they say it's an asmachta? What's the reason for saying that? Right? You need a reason to say it's not. You need a reason to say that what they're saying is not what it appears to be at face value. They're quoting psukim. You need a reason to say that they don't really mean that these are psukim, that these things are deraisa. So what's the reason? That's what I'm interested on. What's the reason for saying it's, even though they're quoting psukim, it's really still the rabbanan? Go ahead. It has to be convincing. Yeah. So what's the basic, what's his basic proof that these are all the rabbanans?
Because they have some sort of kula involved.
Basically because they have a kula involved. Right? First of all, we let the melech and the kala off the hook. And we let the woman who gave birth wear shoes. And it can't be a case of sakana, because the chacham couldn't ask her if it's a case of sakana. So you see, and then he goes on, right? What else do we have? We have mish yesh lo chatatim barosho soch kedarko v'enachoshesh. So what does that mean?
The guy with the cracks in the head,
right?
He class.
I mean, I guess it's what, like a bad case of psoriasis or something?
Yeah, exactly. One guy has psoriasis.
No. Okay. So, tzoch kedarko v'enachoshesh, we're makel on that guy. And mishi yadav muluch lachos betitu b'tzoeh. If a guy has mud or tzoeh on his hands, he's allowed to roches kedarko v'enachoshesh. So again, the fact that the Gemara allows all of these things, he says, indicates that it's not doraisa. Why? This is a different proof. What's this proof?
As opposed to
saying minolon, right? And it's mashma that minolon means where is it from? Show me the source for the inuyim. Gemara doesn't say what's the source for the inuyim. Does it? What did it say in Ayinol? Minayin liyom kippur. All right.
What's the difference?
Oh, so he's saying if it's daraisa, so that's minayin. Minayin means show me in the Torah where you derived where it's from. But if you just say kineged me, it means the rabbanon have it, and we want to know what did they model it after? What did they do it when they? What did they have in mind? How did they come up with these inuim? In reference to what? Right. He says it's mashma minolan is ma. He says so. He's saying it didn't say minolan. It's mashma midrabbanon ninu v'lo boy ela im yesh lahem shum remez min haTorah. That's how he's learning a smachta. Some sort of a remez in the Torah for this. Right? And that's the way the Tosis holds. Go ahead. Yeah. Yeah. So that's the question. The question is, two questions we have to think about. One is, and then basically along the same lines, obviously. One question is, what is it about these kulas? I mean, we were working on ideas yesterday that a kala's washing of her face or a melech's washing of his face is a different kind of washing of her face. Washing of his is a different thing, right? We said if a person has mud on his hands, so that's not a rechitza shel tainug. I mean, that's a different kind of a rechitza. Maybe the Torah only asks us rechitza shel tainug, right? I mean, it's one thing a person... washing dirt off his hands, so he's just basically removing the dirt, and he's not really trying to enjoy the washing experience, right? It's a different kind of a washing. We can differentiate. So why is it that in deraisa we can't make these differentiations? I have to say, if deraisa you can't wash, that's it. It's the end of the story. It doesn't matter if your hand is filled with whatever it is, right? And that's one question we have to think about. And the second question is, if deraisas can't do it, how come the rabbanans can do it? Right? So those are the two questions we have to think about. And if you think the rices are so rigid, I mean, look at Shabbos. A lot of leeway in Shabbos, right?
But all the leeway is with the stuff that Rabbanan added.
No. Let's say in Shabbos you say you're not allowed to dig a hole, right? But there's a machlokas. Some say if you're digging the hole to get the dirt, that's mutter. That's melacha shein shvichu l'gufo. All right, so that's the question. What is so? Why can't we say in the daraisa, like he mentions later on, it's rechitza shel tainug. I mean, we're all familiar with that concept, rechitza shel tainug. So why can't that be the daraisa? Once he sees something like this, he says can't be daraisa. Can't be daraisa.
And that's not in vain. It just doesn't fall under the category, is it?
That's right. Why exactly? Why can't we just say it's not a question of being mako? That's just not the definition of the Isser. Is it a rechitza? Just like on Shabbos, I'll say, look, on Shabbos we say you're not allowed to make a hole, right? Not allowed to make a hole. So what's the argument what's the argument for the Tana that says you're allowed to get dirt? I mean, you're not allowed to midrabbanan, but midraisa it's not considered malacha. What's the argument? You're not allowed to dig a hole. So what do you say? Hey, stop making that hole. You'll say, I'm not making a hole.
I'm getting dirt.
I'm getting dirt.
Yeah.
Right? Getting dirt. That's the argument. So you see that there are different ways to define things. So what's the difference over here? Say I'm not doing rechitza shel tainug. I just can't I can't function with the tzoa in my hands. I'm not trying to do anything special, I'm not trying to gain some sort of enjoyment. I'm simply incapacitated. Hi, nice to meet you. I'm incapacitated with the tzoa on my hands.
Cool, we want to see it's totally
connection. Well, that's what's interesting. He's saying that if you have tzoa on your hands and you're allowed to wash them, that's a kula. What does it mean it's a kula? What does it mean? No, let's just talk about it more generally, like Matt was starting to say. There are two ways to look at an exception, right? There are two ways to look at an exception. You could either say it's you're not violating the Isser at all, meaning it's not part of the, it's not in the category of the Isser at all. Or you can say, no, it really is no different than the Maisa that's Asur, but you have an external heter, right? Let's say a Pikuach Nefesh. So you don't say it's not, a person has to do a Malacha for Pikuach Nefesh. You don't say, well, that's not Malacha. Of course it's Malacha. But V'chai Bahem, we say Pikuach Nefesh is Doche, the malacha. We don't say when malacha was defined, it's defined in a way that doesn't. No, of course. Cooking is bishul. If a person is a chole, needs to eat. So you don't say, well, it's not bishul. That's why. Why is it mutter? Well, it's not bishul. Of course it's bishul. It lands squarely in the category of bishul. So why am I allowed to do it? Because for Cholesh yesh bo sakana, I'm allowed to violate I'm allowed to do the maisa of malacha, right? So clearly that's the way the Ran is looking at this too, right? He's saying when you're washing your hands for whatever reason, even if it's because there's a tzoa on your hands, that's no different than a guy just enjoying a nice hand wash. Right. That's what the Ran is saying. So he's saying the only way to understand why it's mutter to wash your hands with tzoa is that it's simply there's simply a matir. We're allowing you to. As opposed to saying that's not the isser of washing.
Mm-hmm.
Now there's two ways you can look at it. You can say, look, when the Chachamim say if you have tzoa on your hands, you're allowed to wash your hands. So one way to look at it is saying, well, that's not the washing that's usher. Torah says don't luxuriate in water. Don't enjoy yourself with water. Whatever it is, don't have a pleasurable washing. But this is not. This is just basic function this is just allowing myself to function on a basic level. I'm not trying to gain any benefit over here. I'm not trying to get an extra enjoyment. I'm just simply incapacitated without doing this. But then it would seem that he'd have no kasha. That could be a daraisa. But from the fact that he says that since it's mutter to do those things, it shows it's not midaraisa. That shows he's learning that that rechitza is rechitza, no matter what the reason is. And the only way you're allowed to do it is because there's some heter. Now, are you aware of any klal in the Torah that says you don't have to keep a mitzvah if it's really inconvenient?
Yes.
No.
Why?
Pikuach nefesh is a reason for not keeping a mitzvah. But really inconvenient is not. No. There's no such thing that says, there's no rule in the Torah that says, if there's an isser that's really inconvenient for you to keep, then you get a free pass. Okay. Right? One second. If there's an isser that's, right?
Sukkah, yeah.
You're talking about sukkah. That's a good question. It's a good topic to take up. But that is an example of where it's a definition. We'll come back to that in a second. I don't want to confuse things, but it's a very good, very excellent example. In other words, there's no patur of being really inconvenient. So therefore, it's something like this. If the Torah says don't wash your hands, and yet someone who's really dirty is allowed to wash his hands, so that can't be daraisa, because how could the inconvenience of being dirty be matir the isser of washing? If it's sakana's nefashos, then of course you can do it, but these heterim have nothing to do with sakana, so in daraisas we don't have heterim because things are inconvenient, right? But our question still is, why is that a good argument? Maybe it's more like sukkah, like Gil says. Maybe it's like sukkah. What do I say? Say if a guy has a chola shame v'sakana, say a guy has a bad headache when he goes into the sukkah, right?
He's
so he's miserable being in the sukkah, not because of the sukkah, whatever it is. So he's potter. Right? Let's say that guy's a chola. He has a little bit of a headache. When he goes down to the sukkah, it makes it worse. So he's potter. He does not have to sit in the sukkah. Why? It's daraisa. Because the definition of the chiyuv is living in the sukkah like you would live in a home. So if a person wouldn't go into a home that causes him this kind of a tsar, then he's not chayev to go into the sukkah. Because it's not the mitzvah at all. You understand? You have to differentiate an exception. Sometimes an exception means it's not the definition at all. Teishvu ke'ein tadiru. The Torah is telling you how to live in the sukkah. It doesn't mean you have to be within the sukkah. You have to live within the sukkah. You have to have take residence in the sukkah. So you're not chayev to do things that are not, that you normally wouldn't do in the context of a residence. So if it's raining, why am I allowed to go into the house when it's raining? It's still a sukkah. It's still a sukkah, right? I'm still can sit in the thing, but that's not a maisa dira sukkah. That's not. I wouldn't live in a. I wouldn't take up residence when there's a leaky in the leaky roof. Right, so it's not a patur really. It's not like an exception. You're not doing it. You're not doing dira. That's why the Gemara says kol ha-potur min ha-davar va-oseyu is nikra hedyot. The Yishami says if a person is potur and he does it, he's considered a hedyot. You don't want to be a hedyot. So what does it mean? It means you're not doing anything. You're not even doing anything. You're not even being a bigger tzaddik. Why? Because you're not doing the maisa of yeshiva but besukkah. You're not doing dira besukkah when the rain is pouring in on you. Right? You wouldn't be able to make a bracha. You wouldn't be able to say, well, I'm machmir. I don't want the heter. It's not a heter. It's just not the mitzvah. Right? Or like if you hold by tzitzis, some shittas hold only the daytime beged is chayiv, not the nighttime beged. Okay, it's not a pitur. That's the definition. The definition is exusiyom, right? So why is it so far-fetched to say over here that all the Torah asered was Rechitza Shel Tainug? Why can't we say something like that too? Why is the Ran say Rechitza Shel Tainug? Whoa, that's impossible. How could you ever have a qualified mitzvah like that? That's what we want to try to think about. Right. I'll tell you one, just to give you another thing to maybe to compare it to. There's another case that's very similar to this, where the Rishonim are also troubled whether the mitzvah is d'oraisa or d'rabbanan for a similar reason. Anybody know what the case is? The case is melacha on chol hamoed. It's another one of those cases where there's a question whether the iser melacha on chol hamoed is d'rabbanan or d'oraisa. Again, why do they think it's d'oraisa? Because the Gemara basically says it. Okay, so why are they bothered with thinking that it really means it? For the same reason, practically the same reason. Because when are you allowed to do certain malachos on Chol HaMoed? Certain things you're not allowed to do on Chol HaMoed. But when are you allowed to do them? There's a big heter. What's the big heter? Why? What's it called? There's a term. You have an expression?
Oh, if it's a regular.
If it's a davar ha'ovid, no, with an aleph. Oh. If it's a davar ha'ovid, it means it's going to cause you a loss. So let's say you're not allowed to go and harvest your field. You're not allowed to do that on Chol HaMoed. Just stam a big tircha malacha. Harvest your whole field. But let's say, or water. That's the first mission of Moedah. You're not allowed to irrigate your field on Chol HaMoed. Because it's a malacha. It's a big tircha. You're not allowed to do it. But let's say, if you don't irrigate today, all of your crop is going to die. Mutter. Why? Because it's davar ha'avad. Only things that are davar ha'avad are mutter. So for that reason, the Rishonim say also, it doesn't make sense to say that it's a deraisa. He says, the kashler bein atam, I havi deraisa, heyach hitiru chachamim kama malachos lasos b'chol ha'moed kol davar ha'avad. Right? Heycha matzinu isa deraisa, miktsoso aser u miktsoso mutter. Where do you see a deraisa like that? That was are you allowed to water your field? Are you allowed to harvest your field? No, that's us. But I'm going to lose the crop. Okay, now it's mutter. Oh, was there a sakana that I missed? Where do you get that? Right? So this is the problem. In general, let's put it this way. Let's put it this way. This is what we know and this is what we don't know. We know what they're saying is that when you have that the deraisa does not admit to a formulation where we'll say this very same thing is usur in these cases and the very same thing is mutter in other cases. Harvesting your field, watering the crops. It's still watering the crops whether it's a davar ha'avad or not a davar ha'avad. Right? And that's a pretty clear case. Harvesting, let's say. There's no difference. You can't, even a really creative guy would have a hard time coming up with a way of saying that he's not irrigating his field when it's a davar ha'avad. Right? Oh, all right, I'll think about it. But anyway, so when it's the same exact thing, it definitely doesn't, the deraisa doesn't admit to that type of a formulation. That you can do it now. You can do it. You can't do it now, but you can do it in certain cases, unless it's sakana. I mean, it overrides the whole all the mitzvahs. But there are certain types of formulations of deraisa that would seem to be like allowing for exceptions. But those we explain as being a certain kind of a definition, like dira basuka. Dira is not a physical thing. Dira takes into account a lot of circumstances, a sum of a lot of circumstances. Okay? So the question is like this. Why is it that the Ran, and it's not just the Ran, pretty much every Rishon seems to agree that the formulations over here of Rechitza and Sicha and those things cannot be viewed as a comparable to Dira Basuka. They have to be, they must be logically in the group of like the Davar HaOvid, something that is conceptually the same exact thing. It's Rechitza, whatever you're going to do. And the only way that it's Mutter is just an exception. And since deraisas don't simply have exceptions to them, it must be derabanan. But why can't we say, no, we're clever. We're more clever. We're more clever than them. Because I can tell you it's Rechitza Shel Tainug. Done. Rechitzas shel Tainig, Daraisa, it's just like Dira Basukah. So what we really have to think is, why is that idea that seems so appealing on the face not really good? Okay? And then we'll go to the second question of how Drabbanans are allowed, how Drabbanans do take up that type of a formation. Okay, and then finish up the run, okay? And then I'll tell you what else. Okay.